Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is the Coast to Coast Radio Show. I'm your host, Ron Fitch. And today we're going to talk a little NBA and a little Major League Baseball. And I have three people who I am targeting. I have to rip. I don't like ripping people, but there's three people I got to rip this week after watching performances. First, I want to talk about the OKC Thunder versus the Golden State Warriors, a real series in the Western Conference. It's tied at 1-1. The first game, OKC played really good in the second half, outscoring Golden State 38-28 in the third quarter and 23-14 as Westbrook totally went off, having the night of all nights with 27 points and 7 steals and 12 assists, 6 rebounds. He was fantastic in the second half. I thought Golden State was casual with their passes. The mindset wasn't good enough because it was their game was all threes outside and before they went inside. There was Andre Iguodala who had a horrible game in game one, passed up layups to pass it out for 3-point shots that were missed. There were fast break opportunities that were screwed up because of the turnovers. They had 16 of them, and they were just very sloppy, and they paid for it dearly by losing game one. Game two, they were more desperate, so they came out, and they didn't turn. See, Steph Curry had 7 turnovers in that game, so he kind of did not throw the casual left-handed passes that he does sometimes that gets intercepted. He played a lot better. He went off in the second half, scoring. He went on a scoring binge. He was that guy in the game with 28 points, and he was 5 of 8 from 3, and he just went off. Most of those 3-point shots were in the third quarter when they broke free. When they took a 7-point lead, 8-point lead at a half, they kind of relaxed Golden State, and it kind of calmed them down. They played a lot better. And they played as a team. Their ball movement was fantastic. Their help defense on Westbrook was huge. Westbrook was able to turn a corner on Golden State and get to the basket and dish it out to Adams and Ibaka for jump shots. And Kevin Durant, who didn't have a good game in game one, was able to hit a big shot to win the game one. Westbrook turned the corner a lot and got to the basket a lot. And then that opened his jump shot up. In game two, Golden State sent a hard double on Westbrook. And then when Durant started going off, they sent a hard double on Durant when he put the ball on the ground and made the Ibakas and made Deion Waiters have to shoot jump shots. And they even were so quick, they rotated over to Ibaka. There was a lot of times Ibaka had Steph Curry on him, but because he has no post-up skills, had to kick it back out because he really didn't know what to do in the post. And that is an adjustment Steve Kerr made. Now, how does Billy Donovan make a readjustment to get Durant and Westbrook off at the same time? Because Westbrook went off game one and Durant went off in game two, but Westbrook wasn't as good in game two. And Golden State took advantage of that. And Golden State has to continue to play that scrambling defense that allows them to get in transition, and they cannot, when they get fast break opportunities, they need to convert on layups. If the 3-point shot is there, you take it, but you don't have to try to always hit the home run threes. If they do that, they're going to get beat up in Golden OKC, and they rebounded well. They had 15 offensive rebounds. Golden State had 15 offensive rebounds in game two. I don't think you're going to do that in OKC. So, OKC is going to have to tighten up there. But the rebounding edge has to go to OKC if they have any chance of winning this series. And if Golden State takes care of the ball, I believe Golden State will win the series in 7, like I said. It's going to be really tight. I just think Golden State's a little more disciplined. But OKC's at home. So, OKC could definitely win their home games. It's just that if you're Golden State, you want game 3. You want to come out. You got an extra day's rest. Steph Curry gets his knee rested. You want to come out like gangbusters and try to take care of business on the road, get the home field advantage back. If Golden State could win game 3, they know that all the big games are at their home. 5 and 7 are in their place. And that'll be big. The later the series goes, the more it favors the champ, because the champ has been there before. If OKC could put pressure on Golden State and make them press a little like they did in game one, they have a chance and get them nervous, and then they start pressing and throwing up crazy threes and Draymond Green taking crazy shots like he did in game one, OKC's got the advantage because Westbrook and Durant could just kick butt and take over the game. But if Golden State plays their game, doubles Durant and Westbrook, gets them a little frustrated, gets Westbrook, he can get a little crazy with his passes and his shots sometimes, get him a little off kilter, Golden State can win because they're a little more disciplined. I'm not going to talk much about the other series. Cleveland's dominating. Like I told you guys Monday, that they would win by 40 game one and win by 20 game two. They won by 31 game one. They won by 21 game two. Because I felt like Toronto was very self-satisfied and they were very happy to be there. And they don't, I don't know, they didn't look interested in competing other than DeRozan. Kyle Lowry is my target. Target number one is Kyle Lowry. He didn't compete. He went 1 of 8 from three. He had 11 points. Kyrie Irving is dominating him. They're talking about MVP, LeBron James, all. Kyrie Irving is really MVP of this series. And he's probably the MVP, co-MVP of the Detroit series too. I want to give him some love. We go LeBron. I get it. He had a triple-double, so he was solid. But Kyrie Irving was the guy, and they dominated. I expect them to win tonight with no problem and then lose game four, which is risky on my part to pick Toronto to even win a game. I think the Cavaliers might be a little lax for one game and then blow them out badly in Cleveland and get ready for the NBA Finals and start to prepare for whoever's going to come out of the West. Target number Matt Harvey. He is the New York Met pitcher, and I've had some issues with Matt Harvey. He was an all-star in 2013. He was 9-5 with 2.27 ERA, and he was big time. But the problem was he had an ego problem. Then I forget all the magazine covers on all that stuff, but this got to his head. He's tweeting Yankee fans, trying to mock Yankee fans. Leave the 27-time champions alone in their fans. Just worry about yourself. That was my mentality at that time. I was like, wow, he's a little cocky to be starting out. 13-8 last year. It was good in the playoffs against the Cubs. He was good against the Dodgers. But then against the Royals, he got lit up in game one. Comes home, was fantastic in game two. This is my issue with Matt Harvey. He comes out. Terry Collins wants to take him out of the game. He looks at Terry Collins and says, I'm not coming out, okay? I don't care who you are. You don't ever tell a coach that. You can discuss it, like, I don't want to come out. I feel like I could do this. I feel like I could come and finish the ninth inning and win the game. I could do that, coach. Just let me go out. You don't do, I'm not coming out. And that's not being a competitor. That's being a jerk. There's a difference. He's a competitor. You don't have to be a jerk to be a competitor. Some of the greatest competitors are quiet guys. Some of the best Dwayne Wade is a quiet guy. He's a competitor. He doesn't have to act like a jerk to be a competitor. That's just new school journalism that I never adhere to. I tell the truth on the show. And at times he could be a jerk, and he's very arrogant and cocky. And now the chickens are coming to roost this year. He got lit up by the Washington Nationals, who beat up on the Mets. And right now he is 3-6 with a 5.77 ERA. And all that ego is not helping him. Now he doesn't have any – now he says, well, I don't have any confidence right now. And it might have to take him out of the rotation. And that's just cockiness. When you feel like you've arrived before you arrive, you're going to get lit up and you might not have any answers. I love Jacob deGrom at Syndergaard and Matt. That's their staff. They have him start game one of the, opening day. He's not that guy. He's not the lead dog. He's not your number one starter. He's your number four starter. He just got a number one ego. But He doesn't have number one stuff. Syndergaard does. He throws the ball. Syndergaard throws the ball about 96 miles an hour, has a 91 mile an hour slider. So he's almost unhittable at times, like he was against the Nationals the other day when they beat him. But the Nationals beat up on the Mets, and they're hungrier, and they're better than I thought, because I didn't know if the Nationals, I always constantly have questioned their heart. But, you know, with Dusty Baker there, and before the season, Dusty Baker said, listen, we're beating the Mets. This is the number one priority, what we're going to do. We're going to beat the Mets. And they beat the Mets, and they got the Mets this week, and I'm curious to see what's going to happen if they still have that same fire. But they're in first place right now. I do like Seattle Mariners are coming on. Cano's hitting a lot better this year. He's settling in being a Seattle Mariner. And, you know, Buck has the Baltimore Orioles at 25-15. They're rolling right now. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. I'm surprised the Astros are 17-26. It really surprised me. My Cubs, they beat up on the San Francisco Giants in a big series. The Giants have won 8 in a row, and they beat the Giants 5-1. To me, I feel like the Cubs better get game 2. They better get today's game because you got Bumgarner pitching Sunday. You're probably not going to get that one. Mad Bum is the man on it. I feel like the Giants are going to win the division. The Dodgers are treading water, and not keeping Greinke was stupid. And I know they're bringing up some of their talent, but they're just a team that just they're devoid of heart. They have talent, but I'm looking at San Francisco, heart, 3-time champ. L.A. Dodgers, no heart, haven't won a championship since '88. And they don't have the same spirit Lasorda had, the same organization. But it's going to be very fun. As a Cub fan, there's two teams that scare me from a mental standpoint. That's the Mets, because I still think they could get it together with Matt Syndergaard and DeGrom, and they're hitting. And the Giants, because of not just Bumgarner, but their Bruce Bochy as their coach, and just their mentality of when we get in the postseason, we bring it, and they play their best games in the postseason. But it's a long way off from that. My last target is Canelo Alvarez. And my guy, Dante, from Dante's Boxing Nation, the best boxing analyst out there, asked him a question. Do you want to fight Triple G next after he beat up on the most overrated fighter of all time, Amir Khan? And he said, yeah, he flexes muscles. We Mexicans are not scared, which is true. I know Mexican fighters are not punching hardcore fighters. But he's hemming and hawing, talking about, well, we got a we'll see. And Oscar's camp is not sure. And they're looking at their options. And you, dude, you got to fight him. You got to fight Triple G. You can't go down and fight smaller fighters. You said that you called Triple G after the fight. Sign the fight right away. Don't be a chicken. Man up and fight Triple G next. If you don't, I'm going to let you have it with both barrels. I'm going to monitor this situation to see what his next fight is. If it's not Triple G, on both the Curse Radio, I will let him have it. And I'm a big Alvarez fan, too, but I got to tell you the truth at all times. And Monday, at 10 a.m., I will bring you more truth.